We're up to page 18, 19, and we're up to verse 17 of design. And we are today going to first man. Ready? Paragimel Pasuk Yizayin, chapter 3, verse 17. Ulatam Amar. And to man he said, the way the article translates was, to Adam he said, you know, this is a big issue, how to deal with this name, Adam, because Adam really means man. Right, man taken from as Adam, taken from the Adamah, taken from the ground. So therefore, you know, when it says Adam in Rashi, it has two meanings. It has the meaning of Adam, the person, Adam, and mankind, because mankind is represented at this point in history by Adam being the microcosm of all mankind for all generations. So it says to Adam, Adam, I'm asking you, Shammah to Kodesh Tefah, because you listened to your wife. Now, obviously, listening to his wife would not have been a bad thing, but the fact is that listening to his wife in this case was going against the will of God, right? He said, Shammah to Kodesh Tefah, because you listened to the voice of your wife. Now, this is interesting. Why do you think the Torah has to say here, the Kodesh Tefah? Why doesn't the Torah just say, let each Tefah?
Because it's the voice. His wife, isn't to the. It's not so much his wife, it was the voice of his wife which could refer to the Eight Tahara, and she had a choice between the Eight Tahara and the Eight Tahara.
How do you put all. Not bad, but how do you put all that in the word voice?
It's just not her.
It's creative, and I like it. But that's just what it means. And so, Jonathan wanted to put it also as a subject of the word cold, which not necessarily clear that the word voice means that. But I have to tell you that he's right. There's a difference, although he might not know why he's right. There's a difference.
So, Mr. Duncan, we have a working mark here today. There's a lot to do.
The diminishing coal that we have here in the pasuk, and the word dibor. Dibor means speech. Coal means voice. What's the diminishing coal and dibor? A coal is a sound. It can be translated as voice, but it really means the sound. When we have a bracha, which we say on Rosh Hashanah, Berachas Hashem Elokeinu Melechem Asher Kishon Mitzvot Kano, Lishmoa Kol Shofar, to hear the sound of the shofar, right? Whereas Dibur is actually verbal communication, right? There are words in Dibur. There aren't necessarily words in the kol. A kol is a simple sound. But the word dibur means actually the word involved. So what Hashem is saying to Adam, I think, is that it's not the rational argument which your wife made to you, which convinced you to eat from the tree. There are no rational arguments to eat from the tree, right? The rational reason dictates if God tells you to do not to do something, then there is no question that you should not do it. How are you going to reason against God? But, right, Hashem says to him, no, shamata l'kol ishtecha, you listen to the sound of your wife's voice, meaning you are emotionally persuaded by your wife to do this. And if you look back on the previous page, on page 16-17, in Pasuk Yavetz, verse 12, there, Adam says, he tries to say, he says, the woman who you gave to be with me, she gave me of the tree and I ate. Right? He doesn't talk about the conversation between him and his wife. He obviously doesn't want to talk about the conversation. He wants to kind of evade the topic of what went on between the two of them. He says, she gave it to me. But here Hashem says, let's not forget these spies that are giving it to you. There was some sort of persuasion which had to occur. So what happened was, your wife persuaded you by the call, by the sound she made, not so much the words are immaterial, but rather the fact that your wife persuaded you, seduced you to eat from the tree, that was the problem. That's why you're being punished. You heard Kol Yishtecha, but Tocham Min HaEitz, and as a result, you ate mina from the tree asher tzivichtiko le'mor, that I commanded you, saying, lo sochal mimenu, don't eat from it. By the way, it's interesting usage here. I try to see me. See, call me more. It could have just said that I commanded you. What does it say? I commanded you, say it. You see that extra word, they more?
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's word which I made tons of chumash, right? The, by the Be'er Hashem, and Moshe Lemar, one of the most prevalent verse in the entire Torah is, and God spoke to Moses, say it. So when we have that verse all over the Torah, right? Everybody knows that verse is like all over the place, right? So what does the word Lemar mean in that verse?
To
say to who?
Well, then two opinions. One is to say to the people of Israel, and then another one, I forget what it was, and then about another thousand offices.
Very
clear. To say into the Torah, like to say.
I like the first one better.
To say
okay. I'm not sure the second one is anyway, but when you said the first interpretation is good. When it says by the Be'er Hashem Moshe Lemar, it means Moshe was told to say over. Moshe was given a message. This mitzvah, and he was told, go tell over the Jewish people this mitzvah. Okay? So here too, Adam was told to tell over the mitzvah. Which is, to whom was he told to tell over the mitzvah?
Eve.
Right. To, not yet called Eve, to the woman, right?
Woman.
So to tell it over to the woman. And did he, and as he said, the name of the mountain, that when he told it over to her, he didn't tell it over to her, right? He just told it over as if it was a recommendation. Not as if it was an actual, you know, command. It was actually was, when he transmitted, it wasn't transmitted as a tivui, as a command, but as an amira, a statement. So therefore, as his wife made the mistake, of course, well, it's a statement and it was proven not true because she touched it and she didn't die, so therefore everything else followed as a result. So he says there's two things here. First of all, you listen to the voice of your wife. That's bad. And then you ate from the tree, Asher Sinisichol Lemor, which I told you, so that you should tell others, also how men are not to eat from it. Remember, the other Rabbi Nelson said, we saw that a couple of weeks ago, that Adam told Chava that not only not allowed to eat it, but not allowed to touch it. And he didn't say, it's my decree upon you not to touch it. He made it sound like God said not to touch it. So therefore, you mess everything up. First of all, you should listen to it. Secondly, let's go back in time. I commanded you to tell her the right thing, not to eat. And you mucked up because you told her in a way which indicated to her that I said also not to touch it, right? So you mucked up not just here at the end, but you mucked up at the beginning as well. So now what do we have to do for you? What exactly are you going to do as a result of this sin which you have committed? So he said, by the way, several people have brought up here in the course of a couple weeks of learning this, that there are great Jewish thinkers, among them the author from Nevada, who is very famous for this, who said that Adam made a rational decision. He decided that it was better for a man to come to God out of darkness than to come to God out of light. And therefore, he decided to bring the world down in order to have that kind of, like we said, a roller coaster effect, that there's going to be ups and downs, and life's going to be exciting, and things are going to be stimulating, and things are going to be more of a sanctification of God's name. That's actually was a decision which he made. It wasn't a sin so much as a decision. Yes, that's true. They are those thinkers who say it was a decision. But what Hashem is telling him here is, even if you make a decision, there are several problems in your decision, right? First of all, the reason why you ate is not because of a decision in the end. The decision came after you listened to your wife. After she ate, she came to you and persuaded you to eat, and then you made the decision. Had you made the decision before that, we could talk. But first of all, you listened to your wife. Then you decided to eat. At that point, you're just transgressing my command. There's no, it's plain and simple transgressive command. You can't say you made a rational, deliberate decision. It might have seemed so in your mind, but that's not the case. If you start with an emotional conversation with your wife, then, or anybody else for that matter, then the decision you make afterwards is going to be swayed by that as objective as you might think you are. So therefore, Hashem is saying, you felt you were objective. And maybe you couldn't make the right decision, but the way you made the decision is certainly not the right way to make it. Okay? So therefore, things have to change. Now, I'm going to point it out in the next line. It says, as a result, right, Arura Hadama Baburecha. Now, the Ramadan says, in proper Hebrew grammar, the verse should not say, how do you translate it? the land is a curse is around because of you. Right? That's what it says in because Baburecha means because of you, but that's not really a translation of Baburecha. Let me explain. The word because, the word which we would have used, if you wanted to indicate that because of man's deed, the land was cursed, would be Bigralecha. Because of you, as a result of what you did wrong, therefore the land is cursed. But Baburecha means for you, not because of you. It means for you the land is going to be cursed. And usually, Bavur means for a positive purpose. Like when we answer, when we say on the night of Pesach, right? We say Bavur Zeh. I forget the exact language. We say it to one of the four sons. Bavur Zeh. What?
Is this what he did to you?
No, in order to do this, Hashem took us out of Egypt, right? Bavur Zeh, and we say Bavur Zeh means Hashem took us out of Egypt in order to do this. Not because, when we say that, we don't say Hashem took us out of Egypt because of X, Y, Z. We're saying Hashem took us out of Egypt so that now we should be able to do A, B, C. So what the way the Malbim explains the process means, it's not a punishment that the land is now going to be cursed. It's not a punishment in the sense of a punishment that because you did this, this is what's going to happen, and you're going to suffer. No! It means for your own benefit. For you, the land has to be like this. You understand what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
It's from here on in, right? Yes, it says 1 second. I don't know, I'm trying to think of a parallel possible, but I can't think of what
I'm
saying.
What? If it's for his own good, it's going to happen. How is this punishment? Your own benefit of the land is going to be cursed.
Absolutely.
I don't understand that.
He's going to be more thankful for what the land brought him if he's got to toil it himself.
Well, let's step a minute back a second. We have to talk about the idea of punishment in our sources, right?
Mm.
So we understand this is a given, an axiomatic thing in Judaism, right? That punishment has to be positive in the sense that they're going to fix things up. We're not going to punish a person because we want to take revenge on him, but we want to punish him in a way which is actually going to be positive for that person, right? Mm. So in other words, the punishment which Adam is getting here is a positive thing. It's a good thing for him, right? Yes.
When there were these punishments, for instance, when he ate from the tree and got to him, he was going to be punished, did he know that the punishment was a negative thing? Because until Yitzhak and Yaakov, they didn't realize what pain was, or what...
This wasn't pain, it's not that being
no, I'm saying, if you've done something wrong, if somebody tells you you've done something wrong, you feel bad that you've done something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm asking is, did he know that he'd done something wrong? I mean, did he feel that he'd done something wrong?
That's a good question. Obviously not till now,
mm-hmm.
But I think as a result of this, what?
Why
did he have guilty conscience? He had a guilty conscience, but No. He felt guilty, obviously, but I don't think that until God came to him and explained why he was feeling guilty, he had an idea why he was feeling guilty.
Yeah, some of the people feel guilty.
This happens psychologically to people all the time. That's why psychoanalysts make lots of money. Because the people feel all sorts of feelings which they don't know what it's attributed to, so therefore the psychoanalyst comes and tells you, or the psychotherapist comes and tells you, you're feeling bad because, you know, you had a bad relationship with your mother. Whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
I'll oversimplify the point. So the idea is, Hashem came to the set, you know why you're feeling guilty? I'll tell you why I'm feeling guilty. Kishamata mikolishtema, because you listened to your wife's voice, and also you ate from the tree, which we're not supposed to eat.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if he fully realized why he was feeling what he was feeling until this point in time.
Right. Okay? Until it was explained to him by God, he didn't have that feeling. He didn't have, like, a bad feeling.
He had a bad feeling, but he
didn't understand
it. He didn't understand.
He didn't
understand why yet, yeah.
So he blamed it on his wife, who's really like a substitute mother?
That's very good. That's very good.
Is that the same situation with Cain and Abel?
That's like a Freudian approach to the sin of...
Is that the same kind of explanation that we can give for Cain and Abel? Because when Abel came up, struck against Cain, he didn't realize he did something wrong, and then God said to him, a curse is you because you...
It could be. When we get there, we'll have to see.
I don't think so, because but I can't tell you why right now, because I give away.
No, okay.
Okay, so we have to...
Oh, you can give away a seat,
The verdict that was in the case, that's not the case.
Right.
Well, so the Malvin says a very interesting thing. The Malvin's language in this one. He says... What? The Malvin says... No, but he says... I'll tell you what he says. He says... Now that you ate from the Eitzadas, from the tree of knowledge, right? If you have an easy time finding your sustenance, then you're going to have lots of time during the day to imagine all sorts of desires. You know, just sort of surf the web and find all the pornographic websites. In other words, if you have free time, then actually you're going to be involved. Your mind is going to be occupied with all those desires, right? Therefore, it's necessary you to be constantly distracted from your mind, this amazing thing, and you have to toil to get your breath. Because only that way will your non-mind not become preoccupied with jealousy, desire, and the pursuit of honor, right? And that's why we're making you eating a bitzavon. Bitzavon here means, he translates it as through suffering, the article, but that's not a good translation. The word bitzavon means through anxiety. It means a person who is constantly going to be anxious about his sustenance. So his anxiety about his sustenance is what's going to distract him, because he's going to keep him busy, that he won't turn towards all sorts of negative images in his mind, right? Right, he's too busy to think. Yeah, but it was true. Anxiety is also some negative, right? Yeah. But no human being, I think it's an axiom of psychology, no human being enters into a harmful state of mind unless it resolves for him some other issue which he has. So the reason why we have anxiety is because anxiety substitutes for all sorts of other things which we can have in bed. So therefore, what is anxiety substituting? And a person who is, you know, in that low state, after the sin, is substituting for all sorts of other things which he could be doing, you know, like becoming a mass murderer, all that kind of stuff. Then he is anxious instead. Yeah.
It's an interesting parallel that here we see that being distracted with the toils of doing what you're meant to do is protecting against sin, because in the free time you'll sin and be materialistic with your desires. And direct opposite we see today, where people are being distracted by their desires and blinding themselves to real life. And they don't think about their demise, they don't think about, you know, God, they don't think about all these things that they're supposed to think about, and they're not thinking about my mission on this earth. They're distracting themselves with all these desires. And here we think you should be doing it the other way. You should be distracting yourself from those desires by thinking about what you should be doing.
Right, exactly. And the first time we see it happening, in fact, yeah. I mentioned this last week on Thursday, first time we see it, actually, I didn't mention it fully, but I alluded to it. When is the first time we see the world break down completely into immorality?
No.
No, before that.
Noah.
The flood, right?
Yeah.
Because what did they get when Noah came on the scene? What did Noah invent?
The realization that they've been doing something wrong. The realization that...
I thought I told you this. Maybe I
thought that Hashem was...
No. Look at page...
It gave him the old liquor pun.
Page 27, verse 29, in the article translation commentary, right? Zayna Kamena, this will bring us rest. A rendering follows Rashi relates Noah to the root Noah, meaning rest, i.e. you'll bring us rest in the sense of relief from the toil of our hands. This is prophetically in reference to the invention of farming tools, which was attributed to Noah. Until this time, the consequence of the curse decreed upon Adam, the earth produced thorns and thistles when one planted wheat. And Noah stays deceased because he invented the plow. So Rabbi Isaac, what happened when they got the plow? What do you think all of a sudden they had?
Free time.
Leisure time.
What happens when they have leisure time? They sin. They get swept away by a flood, right? That's really exactly what happens.
So in our leisure time, we should study Torah.
What?
So
the thing is, the question is now, obviously you have to look at, that was the world as it evolves over time, right? Clearly, God, over time, has made the world a place where people have more and more leisure time, right? This point is a remarkable point in history today, where people have more leisure time than they work. It never was like that in the past. But still, 100 years ago, people worked much more than they had leisure time, right? Mm-hmm. Now, people, a lot of people have much more work time than they have leisure time. So they're also in that very difficult situation. What are people going to do in their leisure time, right? Most people don't use their leisure time to start reading Plato or Socrates or Aristotle, right? So most people use their leisure time for all sorts of difficult, negative things. It happens to be, let me digress for a minute and just read it here, which is, it happens to be that one of the great kindnesses which God has granted the world in this late time is the invention of sports. Not sports to play, but sports to watch. Mm-hmm. Meaning that if there was not so much, if there weren't so many sporting events which one could get on the television 24 hours a day, then lots of people would actually be on the streets themselves enacting violent acts, which now they see hockey players do. So therefore, this is a great gift to mankind that people can take out their animosities and their sorts of negative things which they would have done with their leisure time in a vicarious way by watching hockey, football, whatever the case might be.
How do you know the sports don't create the impulse?
What?
How do you know the sports don't create the impulse?
It may well be, but I think I'm not saying it works both ways, of course, but I think there's far less violence in the United States than there would be otherwise were there not these sports. That's my I have not done scientific work, but that's my perspective.
The point is that the leisure time is not used
But now it's man's benefit for most people's benefit they don't have leisure time. Because most people, if Adam abuses leisure time, so how much more so other people can abuse their leisure time? So therefore, for your own good, there's not going to be much leisure. And I think that's the Puritan work ethic, right? Mm-hmm. If you work and you work and you work, so that makes you quite constructive and you're doing meaningful stuff. And, you know, the moment you become idle leads to all sorts of frivolity.
The other thing is really, when you have a lot of people, they have leisure time, they work all the time, I did that. It's also a bad thing. Because the one put on here is to work or in the relationship to God and your fellow people. So,
it happens to be that you are using your time now, your non-work time, to contemplate God and other major questions of the creation.
Yeah.
But most people in your place, instead of using their time to contemplate God, would be sitting in front of the television.
Yes, yes.
So therefore, for that of those people, it's probably better to be working, right? Yes. That's why I find a lot of people after they retire, they go downhill very fast because their entire life was built upon working, and now what do they have to fill it instead? The big void. So the point here, which Hashem is saying, is for your own good. You don't have too much work to do. For your own good, we're going to make sure that you have a lot of work to do. That's what he says, Aru Adol Abab, let us for your own good. Be Tavos Achrena with constant anxiety, you're going to eat it, Kolei Mechayecho, all the days of your life. Now I want to say one other thing here, which is not related, but it's an important point on this passage. Chazal said that the earth was cursed, punishment, it makes sense. God says giving man a lot of anxiety working. Why say a ruah ha'adama? Why say it's cursed? What does it mean cursed? So the rabbis say the land of the earth itself was punished. Because it says on the third day, let's see if Art still brings it down. On Tuesday, page 4. No, he doesn't say. Rashi says it in verse in Pasuk Aleph. The article does not bring it down. So those of you who can read Rashi, read the Rashi in the second column, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines down.
This 3 is what?
8-3.
Where is that? 8-3.
6 lines down in the second column in Rashi. I'm sorry, the article, I would read that out of the article, but the article doesn't bring it down. 8-3. So God told the land that it should produce 8-3, literally fruit tree, meaning what God wanted is shehei tamo eitz ketama pri, that the taste of the bark of the tree should be the same like the taste of the fruit. Or Hashem intended all barks to taste the same like the fruit.
Yeah.
He was talking, and the earth did not listen. It all, except I think like the etrog tree and the pepper tree, there are few trees which actually the bark tastes like the fruit. But most of them they don't, right? He was talking elevatosia oretz v'goymer. The land produced just 8-0-3, a tree which produces fruit, but not fruit tree. The lower 8-3, not that the tree tastes like the fruit. Leticha, therefore, kshenizkal el odom alavono. When man was cursed for his sin, yikidog ani alavono, the earth was also revisited on its sin, v'nizkal el law, and the earth was cursed. Anybody ever hear this message before?
How can
the earth say no? No, no, right. One of the very basic theological questions on creation. How could the earth sin, right?
How
did the earth sin? By the way, verse 8, sure, everybody understand? Rashi says that the reason the land, Rashi back there, says one of the reasons the land was cursed here is because the land sinned. The land should have produced tree which had bark the same taste as the same taste as the fruit, and instead just produce trees which have fruit, but the bark doesn't taste like the fruit. So therefore the land had to be cursed. Yeah.
What's the basis for Rashi's finding
it? Oh, the language in the pasuk. I mean, it's a matter, but the language. The language in the pasuk, if you look in the pasuk itself, the pasuk says, what page is that?
4.
What?
Page 4.
Page 4? If you look at the what God said in verse 11, in Pasuk Yud, he said, let your sprout vegetation, herbage yielding seed, fruit trees. Right? Fruit trees yielding fruit each after so far. That's what it says in Pasuk Yud. In Pasuk Yud, when it says what the earth did, it says, and the earth brought forth vegetation, herbage yielding seed after its kind, and trees yielding fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't say fruit trees.
But it doesn't mean that Rashi is necessarily right.
It can relate to this week's power. It can relate to last week's parasha.
Okay. But it's an interpretation, which you have to understand.
Can you not relate to the last week's parasha, where first Moses put his stick in, where Moses wanted the seed to split, and it didn't, and the seed didn't want to split, but as soon as it saw Yosef's bones, that's when it split.
It was incurring
the seed had its own mind.
Okay.
Well, the earth has to be an executable choice. Otherwise, Hashem is sitting against the will.
For the block.
No, God was designed here. God commanded the earth to produce trees. Let's say an apple tree. That if you peeled the bark off the apple tree, the bark would taste like an apple. Okay, if you peeled the bark off an orange tree, the bark would taste like an orange. But instead, the bark tastes like bark, and only the oranges on the tree taste like oranges. The apples taste like apples, right?
Well, the thing that you read on Shabbat, I had it on Shabbat, it's like, look, it seems like bark, right? Bark of a tree. Like
carob.
Carob. Isn't that bark?
No.
Carob is fruit.
That's a fruit?
It's a funny fruit, but it's a fruit.
It's
because by the time it gets started, it's dry. It actually tastes much better when it's fresh.
But it's fresh.
It's wet when it's still moist.
Yeah, it should be, but, they'll carob. I actually wanted to order, I couldn't find any carrots, but that's what I found, I had some beef. But I couldn't find any carrots, so I found on the web a place which sold carrots by mail. So I placed an order on Monday, and it said, you know, can you please send carrots?
so 3-day delivery. And they sent back, you know, we're overwhelmed by demand because of the holiday, so therefore we have none. We can't meet your, fulfill your order. So obviously the Jews cornered the market on carrots for this, for Tu B'Shvat. But carrots are actually fruits. They're not bark. They're fruit of the tree. The idea of the land thinning, obviously, we can approach it from many ways, from many directions. There are two basic directions from which to approach it. One direction is to say that as the rabbis say, every physical thing in the world, every physical entity, has a spiritual component above it in heaven. In other words, the physical entity is the crystallization of the spiritual concept. And the rabbis express it by saying that each blade of grass has an angel over it which beats it and says it, grow. Mm. So therefore, every blade of grass has a spiritual force over it. The spiritual force is a sense, sentience, is a conscious entity. It's not a human being. It's a spiritual entity, but it is something which actually is an entity which has an intellect, has an understanding of what it's supposed to do. So normally angels don't sin. They don't normally sin.
They can't.
They sure they can.
Of course they can.
Of course they can. They sin and gracious.
They're cool. They're like robots. They can't go against their master. They have no free will. They have no
understanding. It's actually very, very big. I don't want to be dishonest, so I'll tell you it's a very big difference of opinion between great Jewish thinkers. Right? Mr. Melio Rabessler says like you, angels don't have free will, and therefore if they sin, quote unquote, it's because they were sentenced. But the Or Sameach, right? Who we have to hold like because this is Yeshiva. The Or Sameach says the reason why angels don't sin, normally, is because they're in close proximity to God. And they are confronted with the truth on a constant basis. So if you are in close proximity to God and you are confronted with the truth on a constant basis, you probably wouldn't sin either, right? But once they're put at a distance from God, for example, when they're sent down as agents and messengers down through this world, so then they have the similar distance, or I don't mean physical distance, spiritual distance between themselves and God to our distance from God. They might be somewhat more intelligent, but they are distant from God. So therefore, at that point, they are susceptible to sin, right? So the truth is that even in heaven, they're susceptible to sin. It's just unlikely they're going to sin. So that's interesting. The Medrash here says the reason why the land decided this, the land made a cheshbon just like Adam. The land made a cheshbon and said, if I produce trees in which the bark tastes like the fruit, then what are people going to do?
Eat the bark.
They're going to peel off the bark and eat the bark. And what's happened to the trees?
They're going
to die. They're all going to die. So therefore, even though God told me to do this, I'm smarter than God. Just like Adam said, I'm smarter than God. You know, according to understanding that it was an intentional, you know, deliberate decision. So the land said, I'm smarter than God, I'll do what I think is best for the world. So therefore, the land produced the trees, fruit-bearing trees, but not trees which taste like fruit. So in this perspective, it was the angelic force behind the land which did it. Okay? But that's one interpretation, and that's a good interpretation, I think. But I have an interpretation I like better. I don't understand it's actually all okay. Which is that... He doesn't like you. You don't like that one either, did you? The second interpretation, which is I like better, is that the creation reflects human directions. Meaning, all the inanimate creatures, everything, not just inanimate, all other creatures, everything which was created other than man, is influenced by man. If man decides to do something good, then there's a special spiritual force which pervades creation, which uplifts the entire creation. If man decides to do bad, there's a special negative force which pervades the creation, and the creation is brought down. So everything we do either uplifts the creation or brings the creation down. There's a rational way to look at it, which is, you know, everything is always balanced. You do one mitzvah, which is the way the Rambam puts it, and you incline you and the entire Jewish people and the entire world to, you know, the good side. You do one bad deed and incline everybody to the bad side. But there's also this mystical understanding that every mitzvah I do is a tool which increases kedusha, increases sanctity in the world. Every transgression I do is a tool which increases the defilements of the world. So now, when the land sins, It's a reflection of man. The land can't sin. But if man sins, then the land sins. The land is also has that same choice, the choice which Adam had on his level, and then has a ripple effect on creation through its totality. Now, the question is, that sounds good, right? But Adam sinned on Friday. Let's assume the literal days for now. Adam sinned on Friday, and the earth sinned on Tuesday. So the question is, does it work retroactively? And the answer is, yes, it works retroactively. Why is that? Because the entire creation was hinged on mankind. One second, the world was created all for man. Which we say, like the rabbi say, a man's supposed to say, Bishvili Nivra Olam. For me, the world was created. So therefore, everything which happens, both before and after, are directly linked to these demands. So how much more so the Adama, from which Adam is taken, right? You see that? Adama is earth, Adam is taken from the earth. So man makes the wrong decision on Friday. By definition, the earth already is making wrong decisions as a result. And therefore, prospectively, the land was reflecting the first thing man would do when man would come down to this world. Yeah.
I'm not so sure that I'm right with this. I'm sure I heard saying that man creates, by man's actions, angels are created. Is that hence the reason why?
That's the same mystical idea, just, you know, for the...
It's Kabbalistic, though, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Good angels, bad angels. Same thing like constructive spiritual forces.
Men create angels, and obviously we can see why how it fits in here.
He knows class is over. Okay, I'll finish it. Don't worry.
Okay.
All right, so we'll stop here for today, since obviously he wants to go home. And we'll see what's going on.